Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is October 30th, 2009, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 157, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, ghostwriter for Mr. Trump. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Happy Halloween.
That's right. Happy Halloween. Boo.
Hey, give me another word for self-centered besides Brian.
Egocentric.
That's hardly. Vern's asking me in iChat because he didn't know that I was recording a podcast.
Well, the funny thing is Vern asked me the same thing because he didn't know I was recording a podcast.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the word that I threw at him while I was trying to act as if I'm podcasting and iChatting at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And what I've learned is that I am not a multitasker.
You know, folks, you're now witnessing the sausage being made, and it's probably not that pretty.
It usually isn't.
Speaking of the sausage being made, I did a phone brief yesterday with a company that's coming out with a really cool product on Tuesday.
I am so glad you went there with your sausage being made as opposed to some other topic. I got scared for just a second.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. And I mean, if everything goes to plan, this podcast will even have been published before Tuesday.
You know, the important thing is we're honest with ourselves and we set our standards appropriately.
Now, folks should be hearing this starting today, actually. I intend to get this out today.
That's pretty impressive. And
or something. Speaking of impressive, Twitter, we have a new Twitter list, don't we?
We do, yeah. We just finished setting that up. And yeah, so if you go to our Twitter account, which is twitter.com/MacObserver, you can see our list right there, and you'll be able
to... That's pretty much everybody on staff that's twittering.
Yeah, and I believe you can also get to it by going to twitter.com/MacObserver/staff.
Excellent. And you and I are on that list. I'm at TM O'Brien. That's twitter.com/TM O'Brien.
And I'm at J Gamet. That's J G A M E T. So that's actually a really great way to see more of our sausage being made.
Yes, and it'll be just as unpretty.
Yes, it will.
Have you ever seen a video of the hot dog filling being mixed and mashed?
You know, I saw something on, I think it was Discovery Channel or History Channel.
Exactly. That's what I saw recently. Yeah. It was just gross.
Yeah.
But hot dogs are so good. You know what else is good?
I can't wait for you to tell me.
A bagel dog.
You know, I wonder if they make those like with turkey or well, I bet you can get them with pork too.
You don't do beef?
I can't eat beef.
Oh, God, that's right. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, well, you know, my rule of thumb is cow, good on the outside, bad on the inside.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to find too many pork-based bagel dogs. I'm just saying.
The irony was lost on me until you pointed it out.
I'm just saying, because the ones I love are made by Noah's, which is the same chain as Einstein's.
Right.
Bagels, and... I think that they're using Hebrew National dogs. And,
that wouldn't
surprise
me.
They're so good.
So
they're so tasty.
Right, here's a bit of way back trivia for you. Mm-hmm. Back in the days, long before I was writing all the time, and long before I was consulting even, you know, I've worked in the printing industry, mm-hmm. and I worked for a printing company that put together all of the shop manuals for Einstein's and all its affiliates, including Noah's Bagels.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I had to fix trapping on the Einstein's logo so that it would print properly. How about that?
You know, I'm the one with all the joke job titles, but I think that as many joke job titles as I've made up for myself, I don't even come close to the number of actual jobs you've held.
You know, the difference is, though, that you can probably make up more job titles than actual jobs I've had.
Eventually.
And it probably also means that you have a more stable work history than I do.
Probably. And by the time Quetzalcoatl comes and destroys us all, I may actually catch up to you.
Great. Now we both have a goal.
Okay, good Lord. With that in mind.
I know, it's time for the show. The Apple Lawsuit Express may need to add another passenger car soon. iTunes and Apple TV were both updated, and over 100,000 App Store applications have been approved. Apple tablet rumors spread to Australia, and Microsoft's copy machine churned out retail stores and Windows 7.
Sweet.
Yeah.
The Apple Lawsuit Express isn't slowing down, and its latest passenger to climb aboard is Sinclair Intellectual Property Consultants.
Dun, 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 dun.
The company is suing Apple over claims that it's infringing even on patents it owns relating to digital still cameras. The company has a history of patent litigation, according to TG Daily, and Apple looks to be just the next target on that list. Apple uses still digital cameras in the original iPhone and iPhone 3G. The iPhone 3GS, iPod Nano, and Mac computers all include digital cameras capable of capturing video. By no small coincidence, St. Clair holds a patent that details capturing an image with a digital camera and converting the data into a format that can be recognized by a PC or Mac. And yes, the patent specifically lists the Mac. St. Clair isn't a stranger in the courtroom. The company has already sued a long list of camera makers such as Sony, Canon, Olympus, and Nikon. So far, it's been able to rake in over $60 million in damages and licensing fees through its court actions. And presumably, St. Clair expects Apple to have some pretty deep pockets, too.
Nokia filed a lawsuit against Apple for allegedly infringing on wireless technology patents it owns, and if Nokia was hoping Apple would settle quickly out of court, it's in for a disappointment because Apple plans to vigorously defend itself. Apple doesn't usually comment on pending litigation, but it made an exception when it mentioned its plans for fighting Nokia in its annual 10K filing for fiscal 2009. Nokia claims that Apple is getting a quote-unquote free ride by not paying licensing fees for some of the tech used in the iPhone for wireless data, speech, coding, security, and encryption. Nokia's lawsuit has raised speculation that it doesn't have any products that can compete with the iPhone, so the company's suing, which seems like a totally reasonable tactic to me.
Sure.
Yeah. Another theory is that Nokia is working on a smartphone that uses patent-protected technology that Apple owns and is hoping to use its lawsuit as a bargaining chip to avoid a patent infringement suit from Apple.
I like that one better.
Yeah, that's – yeah. If Nokia wins its case in court, Apple could potentially be liable for several $1 million in damages and licensing fees. And I'm betting Nokia is hoping it gets that.
Apple updated iTunes to version 9.0.2 on Thursday, an update that added support for Apple TV 3.0. It also happened to shitcan Palm's latest hack to trick iTunes into supporting the Palm Pre, the latest salvo between the two companies in their war over who controls iTunes. So far, the score in this war is Apple 5, Palm 4, though Apple's bench is likely to prove to be deeper. This mixed metaphor was brought to you by Grape Nuts, the cereal for old people. Grape Nuts. Mm-mm. It's edible when you soak it in milk long enough. That's just offensive.
And yet I'm laughing. All right. Apple announced Thursday the release of Apple TV 3.0. That's an update to the software that runs the company's TV set-top interface. The new software adds support for iTunes LP, internet radio stations, iTunes Extras, Genius Mixes, and a new interface through which to access iTunes content and local media. The end.
Beautiful surprise.
Thank you. Thank you.
Beautiful. Oh, that's very nice. Beautiful. I love the intonations and the cadence. Apple has approved some 103,433 iPhone apps for the App Store, with 94,301 of those apps being available for purchase or download as of October 30th. The figures come courtesy of AppShopper.com, which tracks and lists iPhone apps as they become available. Apple announced that it passed the 85,000 milestone on September 28th and will likely announce the 100,000 milestone on the day that number is available for actual download, which could be as early as 3 or 4 weeks or maybe like Monday if the current rate of progress. Google's Android platform is number 2 in terms of total number of apps, with some 11,284 apps, according to AndroLib.com. Research in Motion's BlackBerry App World currently consists of 3,066 apps. Looks like the days where Apple fans had to say the number of apps available for a platform don't matter have come and gone, and now instead we can crow that our app list is bigger than yours. Our app list is bigger than yours. I did a little dance with that, by the way.
You know, I was picturing a dance, which in and of itself is a little disturbing, but I'm okay with that. Oh, that means it's my turn. All right. Yeah. Apple has been shopping the specs of its long-rumored and much-discussed tablet product, a.k.a. the iTablet, to Australian newspapers and media companies, according to a report from the Sydney Morning Herald. The newspaper didn't name many of its sources, but it said it, quote-unquote, understood. I'm giving everyone the little wink of the eye right there. Understood that Apple has been in direct talks with Australian media companies to have them on board for the iTablet's launch in early 2010. The report adds to the body of rumors that Apple has been courting newspapers, magazines, and book publishers in the U.S. in an effort to make its as-yet-unannounced tablet product into the premium electronic reading platform. This would put the iTablet into direct competition with dedicated e-book readers like Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble's Nook, and Sony's Reader products. And did I say e-books?
I don't think so.
Well, good. Then move along. These are not the droids you're looking for.
If you did, I listened right over it.
It's okay, because if that's what I said, I'm sure all of our listeners will go back and check now to see. And let me know.
Fair enough. And speaking of Halloween and Steve Ballmer costumes, October has been a big month for Microsoft. On the 22nd, the company opened its first Microsoft store. That was in Arizona. And they hired a guy on the street to photo document it on Flickr and YouTube just in case no one believed it. Those images showed us long lines of people waiting in line to be the first to look at the rows of workbenches set up with third-party PCs.
Oh, yeah. I know. The kids love that.
The kids love that one, yeah. October 22nd was also the release date of Windows 7, complete with handy how-to videos on backing up your files, wiping your system, copying your files over, and then reinstalling your apps if you want to upgrade from Windows XP. not as exciting.
No.
We kid our friends in Redmond, though. We really don't know if user Microsoft Store was hired by the company to document the store opening.
Yes, we do.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. And by all accounts, Windows 7 is being well received by the public, with only a few problems being reported here and there. And that sound, and you will probably have noticed that Ricky's bass lines are back.
You know, that's kind of a warm, comfy feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, actually. In any event, the sound means it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
So what do you want to talk about first?
I don't know. We were just ragging on Microsoft. Well, maybe we should start there.
Okay, you know, that sounds good because I think you're already on a roll.
Maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
When I saw the photos, or excuse me, the video of the Microsoft store opening, I was surprised, not so much because there was a really long line, because it doesn't surprise me. A lot of people would want to be able to say first, and so now they can. But when they panned across that high-quality sheet that was covering up the storefront.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I mean, what did they go to the thrift store and get that?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a, I mean, you know, so, all right, so what we're talking about basically is, there's so much to talk about on this. So, covering the storefront on this Microsoft store is what literally looked like a bedsheet that had, you know, like watercolors that had painted the Windows logo.
Yeah, and
I think it said either Microsoft or Windows 7. I think it was actually Windows 7 is what it said. But probably, I'm sure Microsoft was written there somewhere too.
Probably.
And, you know, when you compare that to the, you know, Apple puts up these panels at the stores that I've seen that have been closed. So, you know, you can't see through it at all because, they're physical, they're hard panels that have printing on it, like you know, coming soon or closed for remodeling, or like the store in Los Gatos right now, at least last week or the week before, had up panels because they were doing remodeling.
Yeah, the 29th Street store up in Boulder, they're remodeling too.
Yeah, and you know, it's there's not a whole lot you can do when you're closing your store for remodeling, if you don't want people to see inside and see what you're doing, other than to say that, you know, we're remodeling. But I think when Apple does it, it looks about as good as you can. But this sheet that Microsoft had up, just, I mean, it looked like, I mean, one of the things, do you remember that movie about the kid who pees on the sheets and then, you know, and that turns him into a runner because he has to run home every day?
It's the story of Bruce Jenner, I think. Yes,
the story of Bruce Jenner.
I'm starting a new meme, or excuse me, internet rumor. Bruce Jenner pees in bed. I don't know. Yes, I do remember that.
It was a movie from the 70s. So we're dating ourselves here, and you know, so the kid, you know, like he pees in bed, and so he runs home every day so he can pull the sheet in, and that ends up turning him into a world class sprinter or something ridiculous like that. So movies often sucked in the 70s.
They did, and I have to ask, did you ever pee in your bed to try and run faster?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I ever had that particular problem at all, actually.
Yeah, me either. I just took the bus.
In any event, it kind of made me think of that because it looked like a bed sheet. It was just so, I mean, like really? This is the best you can do?
Yeah. And excuse me. And when the sheet's up there, you can see the glowing Windows logo shining through.
Complete with brush marks.
Yeah, yeah. And so when that really swanky sheet comes down, then you have the backlit Windows logo right above the store doors, exactly where you would see a backlit Apple logo if it was an Apple store.
Right. And, you know, I understand, you know, they've already made it clear that, you know, they're borrowing from Apple. They hired Apple people to help them do all this stuff, and, you know, but I mean, even still, like on the inside, where similar to Apple, they have tables set up with computers that you can just walk up to and use, which, you know, it makes sense. I understand, you know, Apple has the blueprint there, but it just looks so crappy in comparison because they look like workbenches.
I was thinking contrived.
Contrived works.
Yeah. And that,
but low budget contrived. Like, you know, like if someone needs to come in and saw some tube befores, they're covered.
There you go. And You know what? I hope they build a Microsoft store near me soon, because I have some lumber I need to cut down.
Well, they've got the workbenches to do it.
There you go. Did you notice the placard, the signs that were by the computers showing software specifications and stuff?
I did not notice that.
Okay. When you get a chance, if you feel like going back and looking at the video, mm-hmm. and you see where he's inside the store and he shows one of the workbenches with a couple PCs and there's a placard in between, it looks the same as what Apple does with their placards showing off hardware specs, like for the MacBooks.
Oh, I see. You know, again, I it's not that I'm okay with it. That's just sort of what I expected. I sort of expected that cloning kind of thing. I honestly expected it to look better. I thought that their copying efforts would look better.
I was hoping they would look better, because we knew they were going to be showing off software on Windows compatible hardware in the stores, mm-hmm. and unless you come up with something that's so amazingly out there beyond what anyone else is thinking of, there's only so many ways you can show that. So I figured we'd see a lot of similarities with the way Apple sets up their computers and software and the way Microsoft sets up theirs in their stores. I was hoping that big wraparound panel that kind of goes around both sides of the store, and it's mm-hmm. all computer screens. I was hoping there would be something more interesting going on with those.
Yeah, I was kind of maybe expecting the whole thing to have, you know, like a faux fancy feel to it, or a faux futuristic feel to it, or
yeah.
something that wasn't like rustic workbench.
Yeah.
And that's my only, I don't know. That's my, it was weird. And so, but on the plus side, I know you said that you weren't surprised by the lines. I was surprised by the lines, because the line of people that were waiting to get into that store was long. It was as long as, you know, the longest lines I've ever seen at any kind of Apple store. Which, I mean, on the one hand makes sense, because the Windows market is so much bigger. And don't forget that this was the same day that Windows 7 was being released.
Right.
Which means that there were probably a larger number of people that might otherwise have been there because they wanted to get Windows 7. But I'm impressed that Microsoft was able to actually get people to line up. Now that said, the people that I was seeing in line from that video looked morose and downtrodden.
I shouldn't laugh. That's not right.
But that's true. I mean, they just, I don't know, maybe it's because it was so early in the morning or something, but, you know, whenever I see people in an Apple line, and I've been to many an Apple line, they're always, you know, even if it's early in the morning, they're, oh, who am I kidding? Like, I've ever actually been there early in the morning. But they're just, you know, seem a little more excited, a little bit less like, time to get in the Windows line.
You know, I can actually say when I'm at the Apple stores early in the morning for the openings, because mm-hmm. I actually do get up that early.
Sick man.
Well, you know, yeah, you're right.
Someone's got to do it.
Yes.
Better you than me.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so when I go and see Apple store openings, and I'm standing in line talking with people, and the sun is still coming up, there's energy in the line. And there's interaction between all the people, and it feels more like this community social event. Whereas watching the video of the people at the Microsoft store, it felt like people queuing up because that's what they're supposed to go do. And I'm sure a lot of those people were there because they actually were really excited, but that wasn't coming across.
Right. It wasn't. And I lastly, I find it interesting that Microsoft felt the need to get a shill to post videos and photos. Now, I can't prove this guy was a shill. It's just his name was Microsoft Store, and he had access to the store before it opened. You put the two together, and to me, that says Shull.
It makes you wonder.
Yep.
You know, and all right, so the inside of the store, even though it just it looks creepy to me because it's so similar to the inside of an Apple store, mm-hmm. I'm glad that it turned out that way as opposed to what I was afraid was going to happen, which was did you ever get a chance to go into a Gateway store when those were around?
You know, I went into one Gateway store probably about a year and a half before they started shutting them down.
Okay. And I'm assuming they were the same all across the country. And it was like this rough cut wood paneling for the walls. And it just, it had this, well, it was very Gateway feel to it. And I was afraid that Microsoft might end up going that route with a lot of the decor. And so we'd end up with this kind of Gateway Apple store mess monster sort of ugly shop. So it turned out better than I feared it would. Wow, that was a really messed up sentence.
Yeah, it's okay though. We know what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, Microsoft stores, blah blah blah, Windows 7, blah blah blah. Windows 7 is being well received. I think that the initial sales numbers seem to be okay. I know we had one analyst who was saying that that he thought that people would basically take the opportunity to move over to the Mac if they had to, like a lot of XP customers in particular certainly not a lot, certainly not a significant percentage, but that basically Apple had the opportunity to gain new customers from people that if they had to move all their stuff over by hand anyway, they might as well do it onto a Mac, which actually sort of mirrors one of Apple's commercials that debuted that same day.
Yeah, that was pretty clever, wasn't it? Yeah, yep. They did, I think it was three commercials that all poked fun at Windows 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them too. I like the way back one.
Oh yeah, with the MacGyver haircut on PC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That rocked. Yeah. Now, I have seen on Twitter, and of course this is just anecdotal because it's just based on me catching things as I'm doing other stuff, but it sure seems like there are a lot of complaints about Windows 7 installations on Twitter.
Got it.
And I don't know if it's just a few people that are being all bitchy or if there is a big problem. Since I don't use Windows 7, lucky me, I don't really know.
Right. Right. All right, I think that dead horse is plenty dead.
Yeah. Do you feel like emotionally drained after discussing that? Because I kind of do.
You know who I think does probably feel emotionally drained, and that's got to be the folks over at Palm. Oh, Brian for the win on the segue again.
Well played, woo! Sir.
So what do you think's going on here?
I don't...
Like how much of this is Steve like basically making sure that Rubenstein knows that you know, traders don't win?
Well, I'm sure there's a little bit of that in there, but if Apple doesn't do this with Palm, then everyone is going to try and come up with their own hack to tie into iTunes. And the thing about iTunes and the iTunes Store is you sell iPods. So why would you let people hook in that way and potentially take sales?
Well, the reason why is because if you are owning the media player space, you're going to gain sales one way or another.
True. And okay, and I could see where some people would say, well, Apple is abusing monopoly power by unfairly blocking other players. But if that was the case, why aren't they blocking Markspace that makes software to allow other devices to talk to iTunes?
because Mark Space, and what we're talking about there is the missing sync.
That's it, missing sync.
Because missing sync is basically syncing the database and the music directories. It's doing it through its own software. It's not doing it through iTunes.
Okay, so there we go. That's a totally reasonable option, and there's no reason why Palm couldn't have struck some kind of licensing deal with them or written their own piece of code that does that.
Yeah, just
their
own one. Yeah. Totally. There's absolutely no reason whatsoever why. I mean, actually, really, that's what Palm should do at this point.
Yeah, but instead they're doing this whole hack thing.
Right. And, I mean, the thing is that, you know, they can always come up with a new hack, and Apple can always change it. And every time they do, it's a hassle for Palm's users.
Right.
And, you know, that's not good for Palm. I'm basically, I think, of the opinion that Apple, there is a certain amount of pettiness here on Apple's part, but I think that it would be in Palm's best interest to stop the charade, and I'll go ahead and pronounce it as charade instead of charade.
I'm okay with that. You pronouncing it charade.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
You know, this is totally a disservice to Palm customers from my perspective, because they know that they're going to have to deal with this headache. And yes, most of them are buying into the product knowing that they're going to have this sort of a problem. But then there's other people that don't get the difference.
Because Palm has been, I don't know if they're as of today, but they have been pushing the iTunes ability to sync.
Right. And so people buy their Palm Pre, they can't sync, they get pissed off. Then they can sync for a while, they're happy, and then it gets broken again, now they're pissed off. That doesn't seem like a good formula for keeping your customers happy.
Mm, it sure doesn't. Of course, it's not like they have that many customers to worry about.
Ooh.
Sorry, John.
Ouch. Have you played with a Palm Pre by chance?
I have not. Have you?
I have. And what I found was that the screen looked pretty. Mm-hmm. The interface I had a horrible time with. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and my friends that had the Pre's, they were saying, well, look, you can do this and this. And I said, well, how do you do – and I can't even remember what it was. Oh, we haven't been able to figure that out yet. And there was a lot of that going on. And – one of the problems for them was figuring out how to do text messaging, because apparently that wasn't clear.
Really?
Yeah. And they would get messages and didn't know how to reply to them for a while.
Are your friends retarded?
No, actually, they're both very smart people.
Huh.
And they ended up going with the Pre because the overall cost and subscription package was going to cost them a lot less than switching carriers and getting iPhones.
You pay for what you get. You get for what you pay. You get what you pay for.
You know, this is like a special edition of Apple Context Machine because you're singing to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
You were so lucky.
So, anyhow, the screen looked very pretty. The software was a little confusing, and it just felt like the device wasn't put together in a way that would hold up over time.
And, you know, and that's interesting because so many of the people that are at Palm right now are ex-Apple people.
Right.
You'd kind of expect it to be a little bit better. But I haven't used it myself. I mean, I know they have their adherence, for sure.
You know, for the right person, I think the Pre would be a great product. But I'm definitely not that person.
I'm probably not that person either. I enjoy my iPhone.
Yeah, I really like my iPhone. And I like knowing that when iTunes gets updated, that my smartphone will still be able to talk to it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is good. You know something else I like?
I can't wait to hear where you're going with this one.
PDF Pen 4.5.
I was totally playing into that because Somehow I just knew that's where we were going.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
You know me well enough by now.
I do.
So, which brings us basically to this week's sponsor, Smile on My Mac. And they did recently update PDF Pen to version 4.5.
They did. And actually, I've had a few people ask me what makes PDF Pen 4.5 so much better than any of the other versions. And, mm-hmm. and the answer is OCR, or optical character recognition. They replaced the OCR engine that they were using with one from OmniPage. Yeah, so the ability to take a document and convert the letters from an image into editable text is so much better in PDF Pen 4.5.
Great.
So,
well, you know, the folks at Omni are awesome, and the folks at Smile on My Mac are awesome.
They are. Yeah, they are, and this is a totally fantastic upgrade. And I don't think it's any secret that I use PDF Pen Pro all the time.
It is no secret. You have let us know.
I have, although we're hyping PDF Pen as opposed to PDF Pen Pro, aren't we?
True. Well, they were both updated to 4.5, though.
Right, and they both have that same OCR engine.
Yep.
Which is really cool.
Yep. It is cool. It is good stuff. And just to cover basics, by the way, PDF Pen 4.5 is a PDF editing and creation tool that beats the pants off of Adobe's Acrobat product.
And the price beats the pants off of Acrobat as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we're talking $49.95 for PDF Pen, and it's so much easier to use than Acrobat.
And it's $99.95 for PDF Pen Pro, right?
Right.
And what is Acrobat startup?
Acrobat, oh, geez, it's crazy. It's like $400 or something.
No.
Oh, it's
really?
Acrobat is not cheap.
So it's both suckier and an order of magnitude or two more expensive?
Yes.
Hmm.
And the installer for PDF Pen is way better than the installer for Acrobat.
Really? An Adobe installer that's not good?
I know. I'm totally shocking you with this, aren't I?
Yes. Yeah. I'm such an Adobe fan these days. Go live.
Ah! Yeah. I miss Cyber Studio.
Actually, it starts at $299.
Oh, $299?
Yeah, $299.
Okay. Well, still, that's a lot more than $50.
Yep. Yeah, we like it, folks. I mean, honestly, we both used it, and Jeff definitely uses it more than I have, more than I do, but I've used it. It's an awesome product. You got to check them out. Check out everything Smile on My Mac does, and we appreciate them for their sponsorship and hope that you show them the same appreciation.
That's right. They rock.
Mm-hmm. There's one more thing that we were both wanting to talk about.
Right.
And that's the latest iTablet stuff.
That's right. And man, the rumors are just getting so thick now. I mean,
yeah, it'd be awesome if Apple just didn't release this.
You know, I've said in comments on some of our articles about the tablet rumors that I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for the tablet because my lips don't look good blue.
And nor will I.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many rumors, and I think to a degree they're feeding off of each other, and it's just working up into this frenzy. And if Apple doesn't release a tablet at the beginning of the year, I think people are going to freak out.
Well, it won't be the beginning of the year, period. It's going to be, I think, either the middle of the first half or towards the end of the first half.
Right, and that's assuming they release a tablet product at all.
And I think they will, because you know some of the rumors that aren't feeding off each other is everything that's leaking from the media companies,
right?
From the New York Times to now this week's latest leak coming from Australia,
right? From the Sydney Morning Herald, right?
And this is, of course, what happens when you know Apple usually maintains secrecy by keeping everything in house,
right? But if you need to shop around to find companies, or in this case, publishers, that are going to be providing content, well, you have to talk to them.
Right. You know, and Apple often basically picks, say, a handful of game developers. And by handful, I mean like one or two.
Right.
To have an iPhone app ready to go, for instance. I think that was one of the things they did for the they've done actually for each of the iPhone revs. Right. Or when they went to when they introduced the carbon layer for macOS 10.
Oh, right.
And they got a couple of developers basically to demonstrate software that had been converted. Like one guy had converted, I can't remember which application it was, but like on the plane right over.
And didn't Mathematica?
Yeah, Mathematica was another one, right? Yeah. And so, you know, they'll pick a couple of like, you know, people. And I think in the case of that executive, the Mathematica executive, I think it was, it's like he was the guy in the company that knew about this. So, you know, he was the one who knew about it. He was the one who did the conversion.
Right. And everyone else at the company saw the presentation and was like, oh my God, we did that?
Yeah, exactly. And but now what's happening now is it seems like Apple is wanting to bring all these media companies on board to be ready to go out the door with this device, having iTablet versions of their publications.
And we know how good media companies are at keeping information a secret.
Right. And I would imagine they've just had to simply involve too many people to keep it under wraps. Either that or Apple is deliberately actually massaging all these rumors and wanting them to leak ahead of time, which is an interesting idea in and of itself.
It is, because that would be an incredible manipulation of the media and the public to generate this this wild frenzy.
And, yeah. Which is what we're getting.
Right. I mean, and if that's what Apple's doing, it's clearly working very well, because here we are talking about this mythical tablet.
Yep. Here we are, and everybody else too,
right,
is talking about all this. And you know, at this point, I firmly believe I believe that this product's been coming for a long time, though. I wrote I think after the January conference call of in 2009 that Apple was, you know, just basically all but screaming that they were going to release some kind of iPod Super Touch device to address the netbook market. And so, I mean, I've been a convert on this for a long time. But more recently, if you look at just how many leaks have come from media companies, I don't think this stuff is being made up. I think that Apple is shopping this out to media companies, and I think that they do want to have it be a good e-reader platform.
You know, there's the rumor mill is definitely catching everyone's eye with the mm-hmm. whole tablet thing. And if you look at other netbook makers, there we go. I mean, there's companies out there that are holding their products because they're so certain Apple is getting ready to release something. They want to wait and see what Apple puts on market and then go back and make changes.
Probably,
products.
Yeah, probably, and you know, we did run this story this week about RBC analyst Mike Abramsky. I think that's how his name's.
Oh, right, maybe right.
Abramsky. I'm not really sure how to pronounce his name. Who says that after talking to Apple, he was convinced that Apple was much more keen on video than they were on the written word. But I don't buy into his reasoning. I understand his reasoning. I think that he's mistaken on this. I think that that it was a little misdirection on Apple's part.
Well, yeah, a lot of what he's basing his speculation on is what Apple did not talk about as opposed to what they did talk about.
Which would suggest that they didn't talk too much about the written word.
Right. And by not talking about books, that doesn't necessarily mean Apple isn't interested in the book market.
And the newspaper market. And
right.
The magazine market.
Right. And a company that can come up with a really good reader product for periodical publications, I think that could be a really good thing both for them and for the print industry. And it's just a matter of who comes up with the right thing.
The publishing industry, if not the print industry.
Yes, that's right. The publishing industry, excuse me.
And well, there's one other little clue here, and that was Steve Jobs saying that no one reads anymore. I mean, that to me just screams that the same kind of misdirection that he used when he said that it's about the music stupid when it comes to having no need for video on the iPod about, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 months before they released the video iPod.
Right. And now we have movies and TV shows and movie rentals.
Right.
And video podcasts.
And all of which is a big component to the iPod iTunes ecosystem.
Right.
And I think that so, you know, there's a column. I've been sick for the last couple of weeks, but there's a column that I've been discussing with my fellow writers here at TMO that I plan on writing this next week that stemmed out of a conversation I had with Paul Kent of IDG and the Macworld All-Stars. We were talking about, you know, what the killer app for a tablet might be. And on the way home, it occurred to me that if Apple could do what it did for albums with the book, that this could be a huge step forward for the concept of e-reading. And what I'm talking about there is iTunes LP, which I think, even though it is certainly not exploding yet as something that many bands are actually using, that whether or not that's the case, that iTunes LP does very much recreate that album experience on the computer screen.
Right.
So what if Apple can do the same thing for books? Actually come close to offering that same sort of book experience to reading a book on a computer screen? Because, you know, a Kindle, a book ain't.
No, with the Kindle, I mean, the Kindle is good at what it does. It gives you, in most cases, very readable text with a battery life that's really nice.
Right. The Kindle is a fine product. Dave, for instance, is always talking about how much he loves e-ink and how much easier it is to read and how much he likes it. And you know, and I understand all those things. I personally am a huge fan of holding a book. And I don't think that any kind of computer reading has yet to duplicate even the reading of a magazine or the reading of a newspaper or the reading of a book. It's a different kind of experience.
You know, do you remember, I think it was Zinio? And Zinio was an application for the Mac that lets you read electronic versions of magazines online.
And they also had a version for the Windows tablet.
Okay. And so I had forgotten about the Windows version, but yeah, there we go. So I did an electronic version of a magazine subscription once just to see if it was going to be a really good thing. And and what I found was that I really didn't want to read my magazine. And it because it was too much of a hassle to deal with the on-screen experience, having to use my mouse and click back and forth, and what they're trying to do was completely replicate the experience of having a magazine open on your screen. And that's okay if you can make it work properly. But if all you're doing is simply replicating that look, then just give me a PDF or sell me a magazine.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think and what you're talking about is, to me, why it is that iTunes LP is such a great platform, because Apple didn't just try, you know, to stick a three-dimensional LP cardboard representation on screen that you can, like, you know, turn around or something like that. I mean, they went to the things that made the album experience cool and then said, okay, how can we present those same kind of experiences?
Right.
And so they took that, they took those experiences and asked themselves, how can we have that, you know, each of those same experiences on the computer in a way that makes sense? Now, if they can do the same thing for the book, they could make ebooks a real possibility for the first time, which, you know, part of me is certainly sad at that notion because I love my physical books.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know. There's always going to be room for physical books, too. So, you know, don't get me wrong. Anyway, so that could be something that's coming for this iTablet, and I think it will.
You know, I hope so. And I hope that it's more than just essentially a giant iPod Touch, because I would like to have a device where I could do my ebooks, and then if I want to watch a movie or a TV show, it'll work really well for that. But then I also want it to be like my iPhone is, where it's an extension of my computer, and it's my office in my pocket when I'm out and about.
Yeah, but it's not going to fit in your pocket.
No, but if I have a device that...
How about your office in a satchel?
My office in a satchel would be totally fine. And there are times when I would really like to have something that's somewhere between my MacBook Pro and my iPhone. And this mythical tablet from Apple could be just that thing.
Yeah, it could be.
So I as long as it's not a real device that people can buy right now, I might as well create my own fantasy version of it and be excited for that.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
I like it. But I guess to recap the most important part here, there's just too many rumors coming out from publishing companies to deny the reality that Apple is, in fact, shopping this thing around.
You know, and I am not expecting to see a tablet from Apple early in the year. If Apple releases a tablet in 2010, it's going to be, I think, in the second half of the year.
Well, it'll be in the first half.
You think?
But it just won't be at the beginning of the first half. It'll be in the middle of the first half or towards the end of the first half.
All right. I will grant you towards the end of the first half.
I mean, because we're getting too many The fact that these rumors are coming out of these publishing companies means that Apple has to at least be close to the form factor.
That would be reasonable.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have anything to shop.
Right. Now, the other thing, and I'm just tossing this out being devil's advocate, it could be that a lot of these newspaper leaks that are coming out are based merely on speculation on the newspaper's parts, and they're just going off of the rumors that are already out there.
Yeah, I don't think so, though.
Yeah, like I said, just doing the devil's advocate thing.
Fair enough. And I think that's the context machine for the Apple context machine for October.
Hey, and guess what? It's still October, so yeah, you're right.
Yay!
Go us.
Go us. Yay, we're so good.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess on that note, it's safe to say, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. I actually have to slow down to make sure that I get the enunciation right. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. You can feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at tmobrian. That's twitter.com/tmobrian, Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass was by Boom. And Push Me Under, our theme song, was recorded by the Atomic Love Bombs.
I like those
guys.
That's
all for this week. They're awesome.
Yeah. And hey, as always, stay subscribed.
Yeah, we'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
go. We're trapped by lies that we don't know. I can't see a way out now. I will not go, no matter how. You push me under, you hold me down. After all, I think I'd rather. I can't see a way out now. I will not go, no matter how. You push me under, you hold me down. After all, I think I'd rather. I'd rather.